This is an iHeart podcast.
You want smart political talk without the meltdowns? We got you.
And I'm Carol Markowitz.
And I'm Mary Catherine Hamm. We've been around the block in media, and we're doing things differently.
Normally is about real conversations. Thoughtful, try to be funny, grounded, and no panic.
We'll keep you informed and entertained without ruining your day.
Join us every Tuesday and Thursday.
Normally, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Whatever team Fee is on has a chance to win a championship.
I'm Christina Williams, host of the podcast, In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams. The WNBA playoffs are here, and I've got the inside scoop on everything from key matchups and standout players to the behind-the-scenes moments you won't find anywhere else.
It's really, really hard to be the champions, but we have to remember how it feels and embrace the new challenge that we have.
So listen to In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams, an iHeart Women's Sports production in partnership with Deep Blue Sports and Entertainment on iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, we have a huge show. We have Supreme Court stuff, previews with Josh Hammer. That Texas Children's Hospital scandal is not going away. Are Americans actually ready for mass deportations? All that and more coming up on I'm Right. Okay, so what do we have? This week, obviously, the Trump-Biden debate is coming. It's on CNN. As you know, I'm not going to spend every week waking moment talking about Trump-Biden and the debates. We agreed to a debate on CNN hosted by Trump's mortal enemies and put on by the network that thinks Donald Trump's the Antichrist. We'll see. We'll do a big debate preview on that thing tomorrow. Not what I would have accepted, but it is what it is. Also, we're about to get to Supreme Court cases with Josh Hammer. Before we get to those, Julian Assange. People may remember the name. If you're a hardcore Politico, you obviously know who Julian Assange is. But he just got sprung from prison, struck a deal with the DOJ. Who is this guy? What's this deal about? Let's talk about a lot of things with my buddy Josh Hammer. Joining me now, my friend, host of America on Trial, which I highly recommend. America on Trial with Josh Hammer. Okay, Josh. For those who don't nerd out on politics the way you and I do, Julian Assange, who is this guy?
He's the founder of WikiLeaks. Julian Assange is an Australian national, Jesse. He's the founder of WikiLeaks, which, you know, ostensibly holds itself out as committed to civil liberties and public transparency. They consider themselves crusaders for transparency. You know, you can probably tell by the way that I am phrasing this that I am not necessarily the biggest fan of Julian Assange and Bradley Manning or Chelsea Manning, whatever we're calling that particular individual these days. So WikiLeaks, going back to 2010, which was still kind of in the height of the Iraq War at that time, WikiLeaks via Bradley Manning and then Julian Assange did the dirty work, disseminated a lot of U.S. government secrets when it came to Iraq and Afghanistan that had the tangible effect of leaking sensitive military information to Al-Qaeda, among America's other existential jihadist enemies, putting our troops in severe harm's way. And he's been a very controversial figure ever since then. He actually leaked a lot of anti-Hillary Clinton information as well in 2016, Jesse, which has actually led a lot of very pro-Trump people to embrace Julian Assange as well, because Trump, and I think some big Trump supporters, probably think that Julian Assange aided his 2016 campaign, and they may actually be right about that. From my perspective, it doesn't make him anything less of a threat, but that is who he is, basically, and he's been in and out of the legal system ever since then. He spent 5 years in British prison, and there was a longstanding effort to extradite him to the United States to face justice, and then we have this plea deal that was reached just yesterday.
Okay, so Josh, forgive me if I'm wrong, but I'm completely confused here. He's Australian. He leaked American secrets. He was in a British prison, yet he somehow struck a deal to get out of a British prison with America's DOJ. Could you please explain what's going on here with the jurisdictions? Because I am completely lost.
So he essentially sought asylum. He sought asylum at various foreign embassies in London. I mean, he was not actually at the British embassy. He's been kind of in and out of various foreign embassies there in London. The British, who are America's close allies, had him confined in a British prison there. But the United States has fundamentally sought to charge him with violations of the Espionage Act. Bradley Manning, of course, again, Chelsea, whatever, Bradley Manning is a U.S. citizen who can actually be charged with the Espionage Act. By the way, the Espionage Act, Jesse, just for the viewer's edification, happens to be the exact same statute that Jack Smith, the special counsel, is prosecuting Donald Trump for in the classified documents case in Mar-a-Lago. So that kind of says a lot as to how the Biden DOJ views Donald Trump. They literally view him as in the same category as Julian Assange and Bradley Manning there. But there's been this longstanding effort to get Julian Assange to face justice. And then you have this plea deal that's been reached. Julian Assange flew to the Mariana, whatever the heck that island chain is, the U.S. territory in the Pacific that I can't apparently pronounce right now. He's there to take his plea deal, and he'll probably be back home in Australia sooner rather than later.
Okay. Why now? That's my last question on this. We got to talk Supreme Court, but why now? Why would the Biden DOJ cut a deal with Julian Assange? Everyone knows this is a political DOJ. What's Biden get out of springing the guy who torpedoed Hillary?
Well, I'll tell you exactly what my thought is on this. And I do think that it is a transparently political move. So Donald Trump has been talking a lot about pardoning Julian Assange, again, partially because Donald Trump feels, perhaps with some good reason, that Julian Assange aided his 2016 campaign. Again, I personally would rather not see him pardoned. I think that he has done far more harm than good, but your mileage may vary as to how you view him as an individual. But especially, Jesse, a lot of younger voters, millennial, Gen Z activists, these are the people that typically tend to be more skeptical of a foreign intervention overseas. They tend to be a little more civil libertarian when it comes to these particular issues there. And those are a lot of the voters who have been peeling away from Joe Biden to Donald Trump. Donald Trump is doing a lot better with millennial and Gen Z voters right now than any Republican in recent memory has done. So, Jesse, that is the lens through which I view this particular plea deal. I think the Biden and Harris campaign is trying to stop the bleeding when it comes to younger voters in particular.
Okay. All right, let's shift gears and talk Supreme Court this week. Obviously, the big fatty that everyone's waiting for, the big fat decision, is the Trump immunity decision. Is he immune? Is he not immune? Is he halfway immune? What are we expecting here?
Yeah, I think halfway immune is basically the answer here. So look, I mean, a full victory for Donald Trump means he's fully immune and that every president after you are the president, you are fully immune from future criminal prosecution. On the other hand, the full Jack Smith answer would be that every president is not immune and can therefore be prosecuted for essentially everything there. But, you know, most lawyers that I have spoken with, Jesse, and including myself, we tend to all agree that they are going to reject both of those answers and essentially give us a middle ground opinion whereby some core Article 2 constitutional presidential action, so the kind of things that the commander-in-chief does when engaged in war, foreign policy decisions, when to strike a militant there, stuff like that that implicates a core Article 2 constitutional function, you can't then prosecute those underlying actions after he is out of the White House. So, for example, when Barack Obama took out Anwar al-Awlaki, the al-Qaeda operative who was nonetheless a U.S. citizen in 2011, you can't then prosecute Barack Obama after he's president for that because this was a fundamental commander-in-chief clause military constitutional act. On the other hand, Jesse, let's say that you find out your wife is sleeping with someone, you hire a hitman on the internet to go kill the guy your wife is shacking up with. That's probably not a core constitutional function. So maybe you can be prosecuted after you're president for homicide or murder or something like that. So that's basically what they're going to say. Then that's going to get kicked down to the lower court to apply that to the actual facts of this case. It's all going to have the cumulative effect of taking a lot of time because then let's play it out a little further. Even if the trial court judge then applies that in a way that Donald Trump's lawyers don't like, he can then appeal that back to the D.C. Circuit. So it's going to take a long time, honestly.
Okay, so we're not going to get some final grand finale decision like we want here. It's going to go back to this court and that court. Okay, tell me something that I'm actually more interested in, the January 6th political prisoners. Does this decision have some implications for getting these poor saps out of the gulag?
Yeah, it has massive ramifications for the J6ers who have been prosecuted under this charge, as well as Donald Trump himself, because two of the four charges that Jack Smith has brought against Donald Trump in Washington, D.C. involve this exact same underlying statute. So this is an interesting case legally because it is actually just a very straightforward statutory interpretation question. It's not a constitutional question at all. We're not talking here about Article 1, Article 2, First, Second Amendment. It's literally just a straight-up interpretation of the Sarbanes-Oxley Act, which is commonly known as SARBOX in policy wonk circles. from 2002, was in the aftermath of the Enron accounting scandal. They're basically having to definitively interpret the meaning of obstruction in the context of a congressional proceeding. It's a very kind of in the weeds, lawyerly debate there. Because it's so kind of lawyerly in the weeds there, Jesse, it's hard for me to make a firm prediction one way or the other. It's going to come down to a genuine disagreement as to statutory interpretation principles, how you discern the meaning of words. I am inclined to think that the prosecutors are being overzealous and erroneously applying this particular statute when it comes to the J6ers, because the basic language of the statute does not meet the actual offenses with which they are being charged. I'm cautiously optimistic that it will come out the right way for them. But again, it's difficult for me to make a firm prediction one way or the other. I certainly am hoping that the justices rule as I think they should, which would have the practical effect of essentially nullifying a lot of these J6 prosecutions.
Yeah, I hope so. All right, finally, Josh, there's a big tech cases are coming down. A lot of people, this goes way beyond them, not you. What are these? What are the implications?
Yeah, huge cases. So I care a lot about this issue, Jesse. I'm senior counsel at the Internet Accountability Project, which exists to kind of rein in our big tech oligarchs. It's an issue I've been very outspoken on over the years. There are multiple big tech cases the court has not decided. We're going to get a massive flurry of opinions here. These next 3 days are going to be absolutely bonkers. Huge opinions coming down probably on all three of these days. One big tech case, Murphy versus Missouri, formerly called Biden versus Missouri. This is the government corporate censorship case, the case where the Biden administration has, one might say allegedly, I would say indeed empirically has been, threatening the private companies to essentially do their censorship dirty work for them when it comes especially to COVID-19 vaccine and masking information and the 2020 election in particular. This is when you had Jen Psaki speaking from the White House podium about how, oh, you know, take it from me, we're talking with Mark Zuckerberg about how to tamp down on masking misinformation. The question there is this a First Amendment violation? The court should say yes. I unfortunately predict they probably will not. Again, I hope I'm wrong. Then the other big tech case comes out of my state of Florida and your state of Texas, involving our respective states' content moderation laws, essentially common carrier laws trying to prevent viewpoint censorship on these social media platforms. The legal question there is whether or not these laws are compatible with the First Amendment. Again, I say yes, clearly so. The Google-funded trade group NetChoice, which is the plaintiff in both cases, says no. We'll see what the court says. I'm not optimistic about these cases, Jesse. I really hope that I'm wrong, though.
Yeah, I hope you're wrong, too. Josh, my brother, thank you. I appreciate it. All right, this Texas Children's Hospital scandal, what they're doing to children, it's not going away. The scandal's growing. We're going to dig into this a little more, keep you updated on it. Before we do that, let's keep you updated on this. Everything's expensive now. You know it. You take the family out to a normal restaurant on Friday night, family of four, you're dropping 100. You know it. You know you can save money, though, right? You can switch your cell phone service to Pure Talk. Pure Talk isn't just the patriotic mobile company. We had T-Mobile before. Four people, four lines. When we switched from T-Mobile to Pure Talk, we all got to keep our phones, keep our phone number. Remember, this is easy. Our bill got cut in half. Would you like to pay half as much as you are now for cell phone service? Oh, and the company shares our values, promotes our values. Company's all about veterans, hiring Americans who speak English. PureTalk.com/JesseTV save you a bunch of money. PureTalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
Would you guys consider anything less than a championship to be a failure from this year?
I wouldn't say anything is a failure, especially because we all grow every day. Obviously, the goal is a championship. There's no doubt in that, and that's the goal. We want to win a championship.
I'm Christina Williams, host of the podcast In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams. The WNBA playoffs are here, and I've got the inside scoop on everything from key matchups and standout players to the behind-the-scenes moments you won't find anywhere else.
It's really, really hard to be the champions, but we have to remember how it feels and embrace the new challenge that we have.
For all the biggest stories in women's basketball, plus exclusive interviews with the game's brightest stars.
So to be here, I think it's one that we definitely don't take for granted. But we also know, you know, that's just one stop along the way, and we're hoping to, you know, make a run.
So listen to In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams, an iHeart Women's Sports production in partnership with Deep Blue Sports and Entertainment on iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This story, I'm done saying things like unbelievable, because we have to believe everything now. We have to accept that we live, well, we share a home with some very, very, very evil people in this country. And this Texas Children's Hospital is amazing, because it's not just the evil people on the streets. It's not just some dirty illegal alien murdering some child. The people in high society, in elite institutions now, are just as evil and just as abusive. Texas Children's Hospital is mutilating children. And they thought they were going to get away with this whole thing. Someone blew the whistle on it. Now they're going after the doctor, the nurse who blew the whistle on it. And this scandal is getting big. But it really comes down to the fact that an internationally recognized children's hospital brings children in and destroys their bodies for life. Gosh, that's where we are now. Joining me now, someone doing a lot of reporting on this, Spencer Lindquist, does great stuff, field reporter for the Daily Wire. Spencer, tell me about your latest piece for The Wire. What's going on?
So what we looked at is one of the doctors at the center of this controversy. His name is Richard Ogden Roberts, and he's a pediatric endocrinologist. He was actually one of the individuals who was a plaintiff in a case against Texas's SB 14, which sought to ban these types of practices, puberty blockers and cross-sex hormones for minors. So I looked into him and into the organizations that he allied with in this lawsuit against Texas, and we revealed that all of these activist organizations that he partnered with, many of them were actually sponsored or funded by different pharmaceutical entities. We had various pharmaceutical companies, as well as one of the nation's largest, perhaps the largest, pharmaceutical lobbying group that represents a litany of different pharmaceutical companies that actually manufacture or produce or distribute these types of drugs. So what we're really seeing here is this alliance between those who are actual ideologues for this cause and then the pharmaceutical and medical interests that stand to gain.
Spencer, now, I'm stupid, so you need to break this down for me. Why in the world would pharmaceutical companies become tranny activists? Could you explain that?
Well, one of the things that's really important to understand is they would have a financial interest not just in the transition process at the surgical level. Of course, these surgeries are often very expensive, but they actually would make more money the younger a patient attempts to become the opposite sex. So you've got puberty blockers, and say that somebody starts this at 11 or 12 or 13, and then they move on to these cross-sex hormones. This is something that has to be taken on a monthly basis in many cases. So it's almost akin to a medical subscription service, if you will. The earlier that somebody starts on these drugs and the longer they continue to take them, the more money goes into the pockets of these companies that make, produce, and distribute these drugs.
Golly. We do have some audio of this scumbag doctor. If people want to know what he's all about, here it is.
Often ask patients by themselves if there's a name that they use privately and they would like me to use around them, and if they are comfortable with me using that name on those pronouns with parents. By the time they get to me, they already have a name, and parents usually know that name and know pronouns. So I say, I'm going to use the name that your child has given me, if that's okay with your child. But I would ask the patient themselves. We really want to create safe environments for these patients, and unfortunately, not every patient who is gender diverse may have that safe environment at home, and it may not be safe to use their affirmed name in front of family members or other individuals. And so asking in private, probably the easiest way to go.
Spencer, is this just one quack rogue doctor destroying the name and reputation of Texas Children's Hospital, or is there something deeper at work here?
Well, this is really emblematic of what we've seen across a number of different stories that I've reported on and investigated. And really what this gets at is the alliance between people who use their medical credentials, their degrees, and then these activist organizations that have an ideological interest. And of course, as we just heard from this audio clip that you just played, this is a doctor who is saying that he uses the quote-unquote affirmed name of a child, even in instances in which the family is either unaware of this name or perhaps disapproving of it. So, of course, this indicates that there's some degree of ideological influence here at play. This isn't simply a case of the medical best practices being followed. And we know that this simply isn't a case of proper adherence to medical standards, because there was actually a whistleblower who came out very recently in a report from Chris Rufo. And this whistleblower is alleging that this doctor, as well as another doctor, actually engaged in Medicaid fraud in the billing process for these types of interventions. And that's something that is explicitly barred by Texas state law. And now it's being investigated by Attorney General Ken Paxton. And of course, we're waiting the results of that investigation. We're trying to figure out exactly who is aware of this alleged fraud and how high up in the hospital it goes.
Spencer, I want to talk about Tyler Cherry. Most people, thankfully, don't know who this person is, but he's making some news. Who's Tyler Cherry?
Tyler Cherry was previously a communications specialist over at the Department of the Interior. And Tyler Cherry recently became a communications specialist over at the White House now. So we got quite an important promotion here under the Biden administration. He's somebody who has a very concerning social media history. He's discussed abolishing ICE. He made a call to abolish ICE. Of course, that's the Immigration and Customs Enforcement, which is responsible for enforcing so many of our immigration laws. He also said that he complained that Iowa was the first state to vote in the primary system because of its demographics, because it is, in his estimation, too white. He also has talked about police, comparing them to lynch mobs and slave patrols. And recently, he actually backpedaled from these statements because he took a bit of criticism in the media. But this is an individual who worked at the Department of the Interior. And as my investigations on that department, the DOI, have found, that is a federal agency that really does show the direction of the federal bureaucracy under the Biden administration. We had a story where they were actually celebrating Transgender Day of Visibility by having a screening of a documentary on queer inclusion in scuba diving and marine biology. So this is the direction that the bureaucracy is going under the Biden administration. And this individual, Tyler Cherry, gives more examples of exactly the direction that we're heading right now.
Finally, you were the one who broke the reporting on Biden, the intel agencies, and them going all in with all this LGBTQ crap. What happened there?
Yeah, so this is a very interesting story. The Office of the Director of National Intelligence, this is a cabinet-level office. It's a part of the intelligence community, so this is a very important agency, a very important office. And they were celebrating Pride Month. We obtained a document from the ODNI, and we found that they were celebrating Pride Month with a list of different events, one of which was a transgender flag manicure. So these intelligence agents were actually invited to get their nails painted the colors of the transgender flag or the pride flag. They were also taught how to crochet their own pride flags. And there was a number of different events. They also heard from somebody who is self-described as a transgender, non-binary, Philippinks activist. So there's a number of different pride events. And this isn't, obviously, this isn't limited to just one agency or just one bureaucracy. This is something that the Biden administration has pushed throughout the federal agencies. And we're seeing this battle really unfold, where Trump is saying that he's going to gut these bureaucracies. He's going to purge bureaucrats who might otherwise undermine his policy agenda. And meanwhile, we're seeing these types of ideologies get embedded further and further into our bureaucracies.
Wow. Spencer, you do great work, my friend. Keep doing it. I appreciate you. Come back soon. I said it before, but doesn't this stuff make you feel old? The country was so normal when I was a kid. It just makes me feel old. Whatever. Blackout coffee makes me feel young again. Wait, no, it doesn't. It just makes me feel good. I like blackout coffee, and I guess it wouldn't make you feel young. Maybe. I guess the energy. Either way, you should drink blackout coffee. They'll deliver it to your front door. I prefer the whole bean. I'm a bit of an old soul like that. Maybe you're a K-cup person. They have the K-cups there. Blackout Coffee is the patriotic coffee company. They're out there promoting God, guns, life, America. While the other coffee companies are celebrating Pride Month, Blackout Coffee is promoting your values and my values. Great prices, the best coffee delivered to your front door. 20% off your first order. BlackoutCoffee.com/Jesse. Go get some. We'll be back.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
Would you guys consider anything less than a championship to be a failure from this year?
I wouldn't say anything is a failure, especially because we all grow every day. Obviously, the goal is a championship. There's no doubt in that, and that's the goal. We want to win a championship.
I'm Christina Williams, host of the podcast, In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams. The WNBA playoffs are here, and I've got the inside scoop on everything from key matchups and standout players to the behind-the-scenes moments you won't find anywhere else.
It's really, really hard to be the champions, but we have to remember how it feels and embrace the new challenge that we have.
For all the biggest stories in women's basketball, plus exclusive interviews with the game's brightest stars.
So to be here, I think it's one that we definitely don't take for granted. But we also know, you know, that's just one stop along the way, and we're hoping to, you know, make a run.
So listen to In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams, an iHeart Women's Sports production in partnership with Deep Blue Sports and Entertainment on iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
There is a stark difference between being allowed to exist in a space and being fully accepted and included there. Over the course of the past several years, we have worked to ensure department policies prohibit discrimination on the basis of gender identity or an individual's identification as transgender. We have also expanded access to care for service members and their dependents who identify as transgender. So we're proud of our progress, but we are not complacent. We continue to listen to the concerns of our service members up and down the ranks, and we want to get it right. We've heard concerns about policies affecting service members living with HIV and policies focused on the needs of non-binary service members. Please know our commitment is resolute, just as it has been over the past 3.5 years, to continue our progress in full alignment with our focus on readiness and our focus on the well-being of our people, on which our readiness depends.
We are in some serious trouble. That is the Deputy Defense Secretary speaking at a Pride event for our military. Joining me now, Katie Gorka. She wrote a book, Next Gen Marxism. Highly recommended. Katie, honestly, I don't even know if I have it in me to laugh anymore. I don't know if I have it in me to cry anymore. We are in very, very serious trouble. How much this insanity has worked its way through every part of this government.
Well, I tell you, the worst thing about it is I just don't even want to have to think about who other people are having sex with. Why did that have to become a topic for, you know, debate by our top policymakers? This is just so ridiculous. And I think part of us has to laugh. By doing so, we understand the absurdity, but we've also got to take this seriously. How this is undermining us. And I think it's very intentional. I think this is being done to intentionally undermine our integrity as a nation and our strength as a nation.
Yeah, it's very obvious these people are destroying on purpose. We have a chief diversity and inclusion officer. That's amazing. That's a thing. Zakiya Carr Johnson, I mean, just kind of lays it out here.
We live and work within systems, and those systems, as I mentioned before, are so deeply rooted in patriarchy, in colonialism, in racism, in otherism. I think that there's a culture of, you know, the culture of misogyny has allowed men to act without consequence, and it becomes part of what we believe is normal, right? And that in order to make any change, we've literally got to be about the work of dismantling that traditional structure at every juncture.
These people in the end are just trying to destroy, aren't they?
Well, what she said was we have to dismantle, and that's exactly right. They are trying to dismantle the United States. That is their goal.
It is their goal. Okay, so tell me about what America First Legal is doing.
So my understanding is that America First Legal, first of all, I think they're doing an incredible job. And I just want to say, I'm so encouraged by what they are doing, by what Heritage is doing, by what the RNC is doing, and by what the Trump campaign is doing. There is so much going on, but I think the one story that's been particularly interesting are these papers that have come out that America First Legal got their hands on about what DHS has been doing. This notion that they have an advisory board that said being religious or having served in the military or supporting former President Donald Trump are all markers of domestic extremists. Wow.
Yeah, so we're all terrorists. Speaking of DHS, what are they doing at the border and why?
Yeah, nothing. I don't know. And I'm sorry to say this because, you know, I worked for DHS under the Trump administration. I was inside the organization. I, you know, for the most part, have a great respect for it. I have a great respect for our Customs and Border Protection agents. I got to spend time on the border. I think that what they're going through is absolutely brutal. I think for them having to really stand down and simply usher in these illegals is soul crushing for them. And I don't think we talk about this enough. You know, I'll tell you, when I was there, I saw holding cells with, you know, as many as 200 boys in one, girls in another. People don't realize the extent to which our open border is an invitation to child trafficking. Children are being exploited mercilessly as a way to get adults across the border. And our Customs and Border Protection agents are being asked to just look the other way and let them come in.
That's insanity. Katie, thank you so much. I appreciate it. Listen, we have the largest slave trade in the history of the world taking place right now on our southern border, and it's being facilitated on purpose by the United States government. But think about that. We'd like to think we live in these civilized times. The United States government is facilitating the largest slave trade in the world. Tens of thousands. She brought up the kids. Here's how it works. Kids are trafficked across. Oftentimes, they're not with mom, they're not with dad. They're with a very bad person. They get in on purpose into the country. They'll get sent somewhere. One of these NGOs will get these kids, send them to some foster home, and then the kids will just disappear one day. We have witnesses now showing kids being picked up, going willingly. They're being picked up by the cartels and people who work for the cartels inside of the country. Women and kids, and the men too, but the women and kids are all around us. No matter where you are, they're around you, and they're being used in some of the most terrible ways. The lucky ones are just being used for hard labor, sweeping up the floors, doing the laundry, hotel services, things like that. The less fortunate ones are being abused unimaginably. And this brings me I just wanted to make this point about border policy. People yell at me, and that's fine, but they yell at me about being too harsh, and especially when it comes to the border. Because what I want every illegal rounded up in the country, every single one of them, handcuffs placed on them,
tossed out of the country. I want the next group that shows up at the border to be turned away either at the moat or the wall at gunpoint. At gunpoint. I want them turned around and pointed back south. And people think that's harsh. I'm the nice one. I'm the kind one. Because that would put a stop to what's happening here. All these people, I'm an immigration squish. I try to be nice about it. You're actually the cruel ones facilitating the largest slave trade in the history of the world. It's freaking awful what's going on. And it's awful what these timeshare companies do, too. These timeshare companies, they lock you into these timeshares. That's what they do. They don't tell you that when you're buying it, of course. But you walk in, you do the seminar, we got a place on the beach, and then one day you want out. Maybe you're done with it. Maybe you never used it. I hope that's not the case. Maybe the kids moved away, but you're done. And that's when they tell you, oh, sorry, can't do that. Too bad, so sad. You're stuck in it for life. You are not stuck in it for life. You are one phone call away from being free. So go be free. Call Lone Star Transfer today, 844-310-2646. We'll be back.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
Would you guys consider anything less than a championship to be a failure from this year?
I wouldn't say anything is a failure, especially because we all grow every day. Obviously, the goal is a championship. There's no doubt in that, and that's the goal. We want to win a championship.
I'm Christina Williams, host of the podcast, In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams. The WNBA playoffs are here, and I've got the inside scoop on everything from key matchups and standout players to the behind-the-scenes moments you won't find anywhere else.
It's really, really hard to be the champions, but we have to remember how it feels and embrace the new challenge that we have.
For all the biggest stories in women's basketball, plus exclusive interviews with the game's brightest stars.
So to be here, I think it's one that we definitely don't take for granted. But we also know, you know, that's just one stop along the way, and we're hoping to, you know, make a run.
So listen to In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams, an iHeart Women's Sports production in partnership with Deep Blue Sports and Entertainment on iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And on day one, we will begin the largest domestic deportation operation in American history.
Okay, sign me up. But do you know my caution there? I'm all about the plan. Sounds good. Has to be done to save the country. I do not believe the American people have any stomach for that at all. They may think they do, but I don't believe that. I want to know what Aaron thinks. He may disagree with me. He may call me an idiot, and he's my friend. He's welcome to do that. Joining me now, Aaron McIntyre, author of his book that's going gangbusters, The Total State. Highly recommend it. Okay, Aaron, you have a piece up. It's time to talk about mass deportations. That's your latest piece. So let's talk about them. What say you?
Mass deportations have become absolutely critical. There could have been a time in which we secured the border and then figure out everything internally once we had stopped the constant flow of new people into the country. But that has come and gone. We now have tens of millions of illegal immigrants in the United States, and the Biden administration has made yet another move attempting to go ahead and give out amnesty to hundreds and thousands of these people. What's happening is that the Democratic Party is leaving the border open on purpose, guaranteeing that millions and millions of people will flow in every year, and knowing that eventually the social pressure will build to go ahead and give them amnesty. And once amnesty is installed, they know that they have generations of advantage when it comes to electoral politics. We have an electoral time bomb sitting at the heart of the United States right now. And if we don't go ahead and normalize the idea of deporting people who have come here illegally, then the Democrats will gain electoral advantage in perpetuity.
Agreed on all counts.
My concern, Aaron, is that the American people have no stomach for this. I remember 2016, Trump gets elected, does some good things at the border. One of them, of course, holding these people in detention centers. And I remember, I know you do too, the op they ran against him, kids in cages, crying congresswomen. And about 15 minutes later, the Trump administration ended the child separation policy. Have to look good for the media. So you're telling me the same administration and the same American people who did that, they're going to round up whole families and deport them back to Guatemala? Don't see it happen.
I agree with you that we need a much sterner stuff in our politicians. It's not so much about the people. Yes, the voter needs to recognize how important this is, but ultimately it's the leadership that will decide whether or not this policy is made or broken. Critical also to understand that it's not really about rounding up tens of millions of people. With a simple adjustment to the way we do business in the United States, we can create a massive amount of self-deportation. Go ahead and enforce E-Verify laws, making it almost impossible for illegal aliens to get work in the United States. Ban all non-essential medical care or anything else that the government would hand out to these people. Make sure that they're not allowed to go ahead and enroll in schools. Go ahead and make significant changes, highly taxed remittances. These are all things that we could do that would change the incentive structure for people to come into the United States. Even just enforcing the border would radically change the relationship that new immigrants have with the United States. If they know that the vast majority of them are going to get turned around at the border, they're going to stop coming. And if you can't guarantee that your family and friends are all going to get moved in and receive large amounts of benefits and work when they come across the border, the incentive to stay here goes down. If you can't get work, you can't get medical care, you can't get any of these freebies, and you can't speak the language, then really, what are you doing here? I agree that ultimately we do need sterner stuff, but I think that there is a large amount of people who would simply remove themselves from the United States if they didn't have a large amount of economic incentive to stay around.
Yeah, I'm doubtful we have the ability to do that. We're not going to get California to enforce E-Verify, for instance. You're going to have these blue states that are just going to take in all these dirt balls from all over the world. But it is what it is. All we can do is cross our fingers, because you're right. To save the country, we have to do it. We have to do it. Another thing out there Trump's saying on the campaign trail is this about the Department of Education.
And I will shut down the federal Department of Education, and we will move everything back to the states where it belongs and where they can individualize education and do it with the love for their children.
Okay, again, agreed 100%. How do we do that?
Well, every Republican president since Ronald Reagan has promised to do this. Uh-huh. And of course, Ronald Reagan promised to do this right after it was created under Jimmy Carter. And none of them have done this. Is Donald Trump going to be better at this than Ronald Reagan? I'd love to believe that's true, but ultimately, I'm not sure if it will be. It does, of course, need to happen. But I think this is why most of these significant actions are more likely to happen at the state level. For instance, in my state of Florida, we've had a big push to decouple the student and their funding from the system itself. And now we have a large number of public schools that are considering closing their doors because so many people have moved their children to homeschool or private school or charter school. And so this is a significant way to go ahead and change that. Would it be great to go ahead and get rid of this top-down Department of Education disaster? Yes, absolutely. But we don't have to wait for that. There are real changes that can be made in very significant ways at the state level.
Okay, so let's focus on that then, Aaron. We love to talk national politics. Obviously, it's all the headlines on every news program, national this and national that. But if you look at the future of America as being rocky, as the 50 states are held together by a thread at this point in time, isn't our future local and statewide? Isn't that really the future of freedom-loving people? I'm sorry, I don't have any faith in the federal government, no matter who controls it.
100%. This is exactly the case I make in my book, The Total State, that ultimately the thing that is going to defeat this massive Leviathan is probably not a shattering at the national level, but it's slow devolution back down to the states. As the central government simply becomes incompetent and actually hazardous to the health of the people it governs, it's going to become obvious that states that ignore it or push back against it or do a better job at what it's supposed to do are the ones where people are going to want to be. Again, my home state of Florida is one people are flocking to. They need to stop. There are too many people here. But they're flocking here because they recognize that things are going well, that this is the kind of place they want to be. And the state has gone from being a purple state trending blue to a deep red state. In fact, I think the Biden administration or the Biden campaign just said they're basically giving up on Florida. They know it's no longer a battleground state. It is now a red state permanently. And that's the kind of thing that we need to do. You need to go ahead and make sure that your sheriff supports your Second Amendment rights, that he's not going to enforce the kind of laws that the federal government might want to push down. You need to have governors and county commissioners that are going to go ahead and push back against this stuff. This is where action needs to be taken. Again, I would never count out completely a change in Washington, but we can get things done at that state and local level that can radically change your life right away.
Is this a bad time to bring up that I'm currently looking at buying a place in Florida, Arn? Are you going to be upset if I buy a place in Florida? Because, man, every time we go to Florida, it's awesome.
Look, Jesse, you're the one. You're the one I'm going to let. You're the last one who's allowed to come in. Everybody else, we're slamming the door behind you. But you get a special dispensation.
Thank you. All right. Hey, do we have the will for all this, Arn? I'm talking about everything we just talked about. Local politics, state politics, forget all the national stuff. Are we getting the will to take back our communities? Are we getting the will to run these dirty commies out of the public library and off the school board? And it seems like, obviously, we're not there, but it seems like we are getting there. Am I wrong?
You're right to be skeptical at first about whether or not people will have the will to do this, whether they have the motivation. But the answer is simply we don't have any other option. This is the only way forward. The only way out is through this, and it means getting involved. It means making sure that we can make these changes at the levels where we can have an impact. There's no longer an option to sit around and hope that electing Trump or Ron DeSantis or somebody even more capable is eventually going to change the tides of this whole thing. If we want to go ahead and be the kind of people that the Constitution was designed to govern, then we have to be the moral and religious people. We have to be the people who are vigorously involved in the civic life of this nation. We don't have any other option. We have to get motivated. We have to be those people. We can sit around and bellyache about how others aren't doing it, but if we aren't doing it, if we aren't taking up that flag and marching forward, then we have no room to talk.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Arn, you are the man. His book is The Total Stake. Go buy it. Appreciate you, brother. All right, it's time for Lighten the Mood. Next.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
Would you guys consider anything less than a championship to be a failure from this year?
I wouldn't say anything is a failure, especially because we all grow every day. Obviously, the goal is a championship. There's no doubt in that, and that's the goal. We want to win a championship.
I'm Christina Williams, host of the podcast, In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams. The WNBA playoffs are here, and I've got the inside scoop on everything from key matchups and standout players to the behind-the-scenes moments you won't find anywhere else.
It's really, really hard to be the champions, but we have to remember how it feels and embrace the new challenge that we have.
For all the biggest stories in women's basketball, plus exclusive interviews with the game's brightest stars.
So to be here, I think it's one that we definitely don't take for granted. But we also know, you know, that's just one stop along the way. And we're hoping to, you know, make a run.
So listen to In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams, an iHeart Women's Sports production in partnership with Deep Blue Sports and Entertainment on iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, it's time to lighten the mood. And everyone who knows me, everyone who watches the show or listens to my radio show knows that I like to make fun of Italians. Why? Because I'm rude and also because I love them. That's the secret. I've always gotten along with them. I love their food. I enjoy the culture. Half my buddies are Italians, and they make me laugh the way they talk. And let's talk about the food for a moment. Part of the reason I love to give Italians a bunch of crap is these people take their food very, very, very seriously. Very seriously. And I take my food seriously. But if you suggest something to them, like one of my buddies, if ever he's in the mood for pizza, I'll say, "Good, should we get Domino's?" He's liable to fight you for that if you suggest Domino's to him. So we came across this video of some dude purposely massacring Italian food, and gosh, this is just awesome.
Every single Italian I pissed off in the year 2023.
See you tomorrow.
You want smart political talk without the meltdowns? We got you.
And I'm Carol Markowitz.
And I'm Mary Catherine Hamm. We've been around the block in media, and we're doing things differently.
Normally is about real conversations, thoughtful, try to be funny, grounded, and no panic.
We'll keep you informed and entertained without ruining your day.
Join us every Tuesday and Thursday.
Normally, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Whatever team Fee is on has a chance to win a championship.
I'm Christina Williams, host of the podcast, In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams. The WNBA playoffs are here, and I've got the inside scoop on everything from key matchups and standout players to the behind-the-scenes moments you won't find anywhere else.
It's really, really hard to be the champions, but we have to remember how it feels and embrace the new challenge that we have.
So listen to In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams, an iHeart Women's Sports production in partnership with Deep Blue Sports and Entertainment on iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is an iHeart podcast.